Heat rises off the pavement as a vendor lifts a woven tray of limes. Steel touches air from a corner pan man, one bright phrase that makes heads turn. Along the curb, straw baskets lean against crates, all tight coils and diamond checks. A woman runs her thumb across a madras scarf, testing the weight. Beside her sits a calabash, etched in clean lines that look both old and new. Paint chips on a wooden stall reveal layers of color. Indigo, then ochre, then a green that feels like sea glass. Nothing here asks for attention. It already has it. The gestures feel practiced, but never tired. Buyers know where to stand, how to greet, when to watch. Patterns repeat with small changes, the way a song holds a beat and shifts the bass. What made these forms travel so far, and why do they still feel fresh on any street? Chapter 1, Roots and Rhythm. Sun warms the market at Independence Square in Port of Spain. Early traffic hums behind the stalls. A boy balances a stack of baskets wider than his shoulders. The patterns hold firm as he walks. He sets the baskets down near a row of calabash bowls. Each bowl carries a tight ring of cuts and dots. The marks read like quiet notes. They pull the eye around the rim and back to the start. A vendor lifts a strip of cloth. The weave shows checks that catch the light. Red and gold touch blue in sharp blocks. The cloth folds into itself and springs back. A pan phrase loops from the corner. Short bursts. Clean spaces between the notes. People smile without looking up. Now the bridge to older hands and tools. Long before cities grew here, Taino people carved spirals and eyes into rock. The lines still curve in river beds and caves across Hispaniola and Puerto Rico. Calinago makers tied fiber into strong baskets and lashed canoes along the Lesser Antilles. These were not decorations first. They were signs, grips, and guides. Ships later crossed the Atlantic with people taken from many nations. Gold weights, stamped cloths, body paint, and braided hair held codes. West and Central African makers came with a memory of symbols that moved from cloth to wood to skin. On new soil, those codes met island plants, sea light, and the need to hide some meanings and let others shine. Creolization took shape in daily work. It did not ask to be pure. It asked to be useful, beautiful, and shared. A fishing net could teach a weave. A church dress could teach a fold. A drum could teach timing to tailors and wire benders. The region learned to carry several languages in one line. "See this stitch," a straw weaver in Nassau says, keeping her gaze on the coil. It locks the row. If the lock is clean, the shape sings. She pulls the raffia through with a quick twist. The basket gains one more ring. In St. Anne, a dyer lifts a cloth from an indigo vat. The blue sits deep, almost black while wet. "You wait," he says. Air makes the blue wake up. He holds the cloth to the breeze. The shade turns and settles. A woodcarver in Castries runs a blade across calabash. "You mark the line in one pass," he says. "Stop in the middle, and your hand will show your doubt." The groove is even from start to end. Lived voices keep technique alive. They also guard meaning. Colors speak. Red can mark joy or ceremony. Green can speak to land and healing. Black can carry memory and strength. Codes differ by island and village, but the habit is the same. The line is never only surface. Tension enters when objects leave home. A straw bag made for the Saturday market travels to a cruise pier. A calabash bowl moves from a kitchen to a hotel shelf. The function shifts. The story changes. Some buyers want a look, not a lineage. Makers need income. They also need respect for the work. Price is part of the friction. A basket can take days. The coil must sit tight. The die must hold. The handle must sit straight on the shoulder. A low sticker can feel like a cut across the maker's name. A fair price can feel like a small treaty. There is also the pull between repetition and play. Patterns repeat to prove skill and keep trust. A check must match at the seam. A spiral must meet itself clean. Still, each maker wants a small thumbprint. A slant in the weave. A new edge on a gourd. A shade of blue that only comes at a certain hour of air. Markets become studios in public. In Kingston, Coronation Market sets a rhythm by noon on a busy Saturday. Vendors call. Children weave through boxes of dasheen and yam. Between food stalls, a woman sells head wraps pre-tied in layered peaks. She shows how to settle the wrap without strain. "You should breathe easy," she says. "The knot must serve you, not rule you." In San Juan, the Plaza del Mercado fills with talk. A man sells belts cut from old truck tires, stamped with hand tools. He taps the stamp twice for each mark. The spacing is exact without a ruler. I count to myself, he says. If I lose the count, I stop and reset. In Rizzo, a small table displays plated straw fans. The seller rubs coconut oil into a handle. The pattern is tight and flat. Heat hates a loose braid, she says with a grin. You make it tight today so it stays a circle next year. The market teaches composition by need. Things must stack, hang, fold, and travel. Beauty fits the hand. A good form is honest about weight. The carry tells you if the line is right. Materials speak the older grammar. Straw holds a fold that cotton will not. Calabash takes a clean cut if the blade is sharp and the hand is patient. Indigo asks for time and care. You do not force the blue. You invite it. Indigo has its own story in the region. Planters once profit from it. Workers learned the plant in harsh conditions and carried its knowledge beyond the fields. Today, small vats live in yards and workshops. The process runs in quiet steps. Crush. Steep. Lower the cloth. Lift to the air. The blue forms in light, not in water. Color families cross islands and hold different names. In Martinique and Guadeloupe, Madras checks signal festival dress and family pride. In Jamaica and Barbados, bold blocks and stripes turn head wraps into moving crowns. Across the Spanish-speaking islands, Guayabera and linen hold a clean line in heat, with fine tucks that read like light grooves. Each carries a local story in a shape that travels well. The shared visual grammar grows out of movement and mix. Trade boats brought seeds, dyes, and threads. Sailors swapped knots. Healers shared leaves and bark. Fisherfolk showed how to cut and seal. Crafts crossed ports and learned to adapt. The line between islands is a road, not a wall. Forms migrate across purpose. A fish trap teaches a lattice for a stool. A cane press teaches spacing for slats in a screen. A drum rim teaches a hoop for a basket. Hands remember better than maps. Design schools often speak of minimal lines and modern grids. Caribbean makers have long held another approach. The grid is alive. It bends to the body. It moves with wind and water. It adds one more row because the hand feels the need, not because a plan said so. This is not chaos. It is rule through rhythm. Count the coils. Count the pleats. Count the cuts around a gourd. The numbers repeat, and a small change signals the maker's voice. Respect for ancestors stays near the surface. A petroglyph on a river stone in Puerto Rico echoes in a carved pendant in Bayamon. A Kalinago basket pattern in Dominica shows up in a chair back made in a village inland. Maroon communities in Jamaica kept craft lines intact for long stretches of time, then shared them out on their terms. Faith traditions join the story without demand for view. Makers offer thanks before cutting a calabash from the vine. Some place a first coil aside as a gift. Some keep a scrap of the last dye batch to seed the next. The gestures are small and steady. Tourism pressures can flatten the story. A stall owner may face requests for certain colors because a brochure showed that palette. A buyer may ask for island look without knowing which island, which village, which maker. The result can be broad strokes with little center. Many makers answer by doubling down on quality and clarity. They sign with a stitch, a groove, a certain width of braid. They pass skill to family and neighbors. They invite buyers to touch, ask, and learn. Education becomes part of the sale. Schools and community centers help. Workshops in St. George's or Spanish Town offer classes in basketry, dyeing, and woodcut. Elders teach beginners how to hold tools and how to care for hands. Young makers learn to price their time and track supplies. Business skill shares space with craft. Markets breathe across the week. Monday is for restock. Wednesday carries a calm flow. Saturday peaks. The pan man holds a short set near lunch, then shifts to softer phrases while elders talk. Color stays bright but not loud. Pattern stays bold but not heavy. Look close at a head wrap lesson. The teacher stands behind the learner and raises the cloth high. She places the center at the nape, crosses at the forehead, then tucks and sets the line behind the ear. This is for market and work, she says. You hold your head, and it holds you back. Balance is the point. The knot sits secure without strain. Slow design meets climate head-on. Light weaves let air move. Stiff shapes create shade over cheeks and eyes. Wide-brim straw hats extend the body's own shelter. The region learns from sun and salt every day and builds forms that stand up to both. There is a steady rule against waste. Calabash shells become bowls. Offcuts from straw braids become coasters and trim. Indigo sludge feeds the garden. Broken baskets are stripped and rewoven into smaller pieces. The circle is not a trend. It is habit. Language follows the work. Words for tools and steps shift island to island, but point to the same axe. Plate, coil, score, feed, set, cure. Each word carries touch in it. By late afternoon, the light shifts. The green on those calabash bowls looks deeper. The indigo cloth shows a softer face. Baskets that were stacked now breathe in singles along the stall. The market holds the day's lessons without writing them down. If a line drawn in a cave and a cut made on a gourd can meet across centuries, it suggests a quiet claim. The region holds a visual grammar built from mix, care, and repetition with purpose. It belongs to the people who keep it alive on ordinary days. The question waits at the edge of the square as the last pan phrase fades. When these rooted forms meet a wider world that asks for them by name, how will the rhythm stay whole and fair? Chapter 2, Cloth, Color, Identity. Morning light falls across a square in Rizzo. Stalls bloom with cloth in bold checks and clear stripes. A seamstress pins a bodice on a dress form while a young girl watches. The girl holds a folded head wrap and waits for her turn to learn the knot. The fabric is madras. It is light, cool, and strong at the seams. Its color blocks hold clean edges that catch the eye. The weave breathes in heat and keeps shape when pleated. This scene ties to a long road. Madras cloth traveled from South Asia on trading ships. It reached French and English islands in the age of sugar. It settled into local wardrobes and took on new names and meanings. What began as a trade good became a marker of place. Creole dress grew from mix and need. Makers combined lace, cotton, and madras with skill in cutting for air and movement. Skirts swirled for festival. Blouses rested easy on the shoulder. Head wraps held hair secure and signaled respect. Over time, silhouettes refined. Each island kept a core line and added local detail. National wear took shape around ceremonies and public pride. In Dominica, the wobbed wyatt carries a long skirt, fichu, and a head wrap set high. In St. Lucia, madras meets white fabric and lace in crisp bands. In Jamaica, a bandana skirt and white blouse move well in quadrille. These outfits step out for independence events, school heritage days, and weddings. They speak in color before a word is said. A head wrap lesson unfolds on a wooden bench by the square. The teacher spreads the cloth wide. She places the center at the nape. She crosses the ends at the forehead and twists them gently. She tucks the tail behind the ear and sets the knot low. The wrap looks secure and light. "Do not pull until it hurts," she says. "You should breathe and hear well. A good wrap serves the day." The student smiles and turns her head left and right. Nothing shifts. Head wraps hold layers of meaning. They protect hair and skin. They respect faith and family settings. On some islands, the number of points can hint at status or mood. In other places, color choice marks a festival or a mourning period. The codes shift with time and community, but the care stays constant. Dress also carries memory of constraint. Colonial orders once policed head coverings and fabric choices. Women learned to flip the rule. They set head wraps high and neat. They turned limits into style. The lesson passed through hands rather than books. A tidy wrap became both work gear and self-respect. Rastafari color codes enter the story with clarity. Red, gold, and green hold meaning tied to land, sacrifice, and light. Black often sits with them to call the people in. These colors appear in tams, scarves, skirts, and banners. They mark faith, discipline, and a way of seeing the world. The dress code keeps a center without asking for permission. A tailor in Spanish town threads a needle and speaks while he works. "Color is plain speech," he says. "You wear what you mean. If I put red and green next to each other, I am calling on more than style. I am saying who I walk with." He knots the thread and bites the end clean. A student in Castries wears a madras sash across a white shirt on a school heritage day. He stands taller with it on. He says it feels like a bridge between the uniform and home. "My grandmother taught me the fold," he says. "She said the line should not choke the neck. It should sit like a promise." An elder in Fort de France keeps a trunk of family pieces. She lifts a doublet worn by her mother. The fabric shows careful mending at the hem. "We kept this for a reason," she says. "It tells the young ones that beauty stays when you care for it. You do not throw away what holds your story." Dress codes shift across work and celebration. A head wrap tied low and flat suits a market day. A high crown with crisp folds suits a parade or mass. The same cloth serves both by changes in tension and knot. Versatility is a value. It shows in how garments are cut and how they hang. Color choice follows weather and mood. White keeps the body cool at noon. Indigo calms the eye in late light. Bright madras lifts a square on a gray morning. Patterns hold rhythm. Checks a line at the seam. Stripes match at the shoulder. A neat match tells the viewer that the maker respects the eye. Identity sits at the center of this practice. Cloth says who you are linked to and what you honor. It can tie you to a village, faith, or family line. It can signal welcome or boundary. A head wrap can say, "Please do not touch my hair." A skirt length can say, "I am here for dance and nothing else." The messages are plain and gentle when you know the code. There is tension between preservation and trend. A photo on a travel brochure can reduce a complex outfit to color and shape. Buyers then ask for the look without the story. Makers are asked to speed up and cut corners. The result can be thin cloth, weak seams, and patterns that do not line up. The fix is patient education at the point of sale. A designer in St. John's keeps both a shop and a small class. She sells garments and teaches the head wrap not every other Saturday. "If I only sell," she says, the story thins out. "If I teach, the cloth keeps its weight." Students learn to fold, match checks, and press seams with a warm iron. They leave with skills, not only a bag. Public events help reinforce standards. Independence parades require clean lines and proper fit. School programs ask for correct fabric names and island histories. Judges at cultural festivals look at seam quality, pleat depth, and how the head wrap sits relative to the ear. Criteria are written and read out loud so that knowledge spreads beyond the stage. Faith and daily life keep codes alive outside of events. Rastafari dress remains steady in prayer and work. Elder women tie wraps before market and church. Tailors still seek a clean match at the center front of a bodice. These repeated acts make culture durable. They do not require a festival to be real. Color stories gain new layers with migration. A family moves to Toronto or London and keeps a madras scarf in the hall. It goes on for a naming, a graduation, or a funeral. It says home without speaking. Children learn to fold it by watching hands in a kitchen far from the islands. The cloth links seasons that do not share the same sun. There are debates inside communities. Some want strict rules for what counts as national wear. Others push for play within respect. They want to test new sleeve shapes and skirt lengths while keeping fabrics and color codes. The arguments are alive and useful when done with care. They keep the tradition from going stale. A maker in Kingstown holds up two bolts of cloth. One is classic madras. One is a modern check in similar colors, but different weight. "Both can serve," she says. "The question is the job. You choose by movement, heat, and setting. The old fabric lasts longer. The new one washes easy. Do not turn this into a fight. Turn it into a fit." Dress as resistance appears in quiet ways. A woman refuses to straighten her hair for an office rule. She wraps it and performs her work with excellence. A man wears a tam in a civic space and speaks calmly about policy. A student writes a short note on the history of the head wrap and reads it in class while wearing one. Each act claims space without shouting. Photography plays a role in holding memory. Families take portraits in national wear at studios and in yards. Albums show grandparents in crisp whites and children in bold checks. These images teach fit, posture, and the way a head wrap should sit without strain. They also serve as proof against claims that culture began with recent trends. Care practices keep garments alive for decades. People hand wash lace and hang it out of direct sun. They press pleats with a damp cloth and a light iron. They fold head wraps along the grain and store them flat. They mend discreetly at stress points. Care is part of identity. To let a costume rot would feel like letting a story die. Market stalls adapt to make good choices easy. Sellers stock a range of head wrap lengths for different head sizes. They display a bodice inside out so customers can inspect seam finish. They keep a mirror at eye level and a fan for comfort during fittings. These small details honor the buyer and the craft. Young makers learn from elders and from each other. They post notes on seam widths and pleat math in group chats. They trade tips on dye fixatives and stain removal. They share the cost of a roll of madras and split it at fair lengths. Cooperative habit grows around fabric the way it does around food and music. Flags and national colors echo inside wardrobes. People combine flag shades into belts, ties, and hairbands during holidays. They avoid costume parody by keeping the mix simple and the materials honest. A narrow band of color at the edge of a white skirt can say more than a full flag print. Restraint reads as respect. The square in Rizzo fills by noon. Women arrive in full Creole dress with head wraps set like crowns. Men wear jackets cut for air, with small Madras accents at the pocket. Children run, then stop when a line of elders passes in step. The mood is steady and proud. A judge for a cultural event tests a seam between thumb and finger. She nods and writes a note. Clean work, she says. Pattern match at center front. Pleats even. Head wrap aligned to the ear. Color balance holds. The maker exhales, then smiles. A visitor asks to buy a complete outfit and wear it that day. The seller pauses. She offers a scarf and a simple skirt instead. She explains the pieces and how to care for them. Start here, she says. Learn the steps and the story. If you still love it, come back for the full set. The buyer agrees and listens closely to the folding lesson. Across the water in Castries, a small museum displays head wraps on forms with notes about island codes. A guide shows how the angle can change the message. She points out that no one code rules all communities. She asks visitors to notice the weight and the grain. The display feels quiet and careful. Afternoon heat eases. A line of dancers rehearses in national wear under a tree. The skirts move with the step and then settle in clean lines. The sound of feet on packed earth sets a steady count. A dress survives a dance because it was cut and stitched for the task. Function and beauty meet at the seam. Cloth continues to travel. It leaves the square on shoulders and in bags. It appears in churches, council halls, and kitchens. It reaches diasporic neighborhoods and marches. The message follows it. Pride that does not need to raise its voice. Respect that shows first in how a garment fits and how it is cared for. The chapter began with a girl learning to tie a head wrap. It ends with her helping a friend and talking through each step. The knowledge passes in that simple way. Hand to hand. Fold to fold. Knot to knot. Local dress codes have become symbols recognized around the world. They do this by staying useful at home and honest in their making. The next test sits ahead. As these forms meet larger markets and formal stages, who guards the meaning, who gets paid, and who decides what belongs where? Chapter 3, Mosque to Maison. Night falls on a mosque camp in Port of Spain. Fluorescent lights hum over tables lined with pliers, snips, and coils of wire. Feathers rest in bundles by color. A dancer steps in, shoulders bare, ready for a fitting. The frame waits on a stand like a quiet promise. The wirebender checks balance first. He lifts the frame by 2 points and watches how it settles. If the frame leans when still, it will pull the back when moving, he says. He adds a cross brace no wider than a finger and tests again. The frame holds level. A seamstress slides foam over the shoulder bars and wraps them with soft tape. She pins the anchor points for the harness. The road is long, she says. The weight must sit on bone, not on the neck. She sews the straps down with wide stitches for strength. Movement sets the rule here. Designs begin with a step, not a sketch. The dancer tries the frame and walks the width of the floor. She rolls her shoulders, turns, and dips. The feathers pulse once and settle. The wirebender watches the sway and marks 2 places with chalk. This practice reaches back through generations of carnival. Sailor, Moko Jumbi, Bat Jab Jab, and Fancy Moss each carry a grammar for how a body moves and what it can support. Early frames use bamboo and cane. Wire replaced them for speed, precision, and repair. The goal stayed the same. A costume must look bold at a distance and stay light and stable at close range. The feather worker ties small fans to test rods. One bundle can mislead your eye, she says. You look for the group. Feathers should read as one breath. She trims quills to avoid sharp edges and sets the cut ends under ribbon. Glue is a helper, not a crutch. Stitching takes the real load. An elder visits the camp and stands by a wall of old band posters. He points at a photograph of a king costume from decades ago. The frame arcs over the performer like a rising tide. Scale is nothing without sightline, he says. The road is not a stage. Trucks, signs, and cables cut the view. You design to beat the clutter. A young captain checks a sketch against the half-built backpack. She nods to the wirebender. We keep the circle but lose the outer ring, she says. Too wide for the route. He pulls the ring aside, unbinds 2 joints, and coils the wire for later use. Waist is low. Adjustments are fast. The lived logic of Moss is constant care for the body. It rewards rhythm and punishes stiffness. The design must breathe. In heat and movement, a seam that rubs will raise a blister by mid-morning. A bad strap will bruise a collarbone before lunch. Makers build against that kind of mistake. Cost runs under every decision. Feathers climb in price when supply dips. Wire costs rise with shipping. Sequins, stones, and fabric add weight and dollars. Camps track each run of trim and keep off guts for repairs and junior sections. A strong costume comes from the hours you do not see. The price must honor those hours. Diaspora carnivals repeat the same craft rule set with local twists. In London, builders weigh rain and cooler air. In Brooklyn, wide streets and tall signs push designs to grow tall rather than wide. In Toronto, long routes demand harnesses that share load between shoulders and hips. The grammar travels by people, not only by parts. From time to time, this road-born craft meets the runway. Luxury houses watch carnival and borrow lines, colors, and frames. A headpiece becomes a collar. A wing becomes a cape. A backpack turns into a structured train. The translation is clear to those who know Moss. It is not always named. An artisan who taught wirebending at a camp in Arima tells a story without names. A scout visited, watched fittings, and asked for a short class. The artisan agreed for a fee and a credit line in a show note. Months later, he saw stiff wire forms on a runway that matched his lesson. He saw no credit. Payment covered the day, not the idea. Another maker had a different outcome. A stage production hired her to build light headpieces for dancers and put her name on the program and in the recorded credits. She trained a small team, negotiated for materials, and kept the patterns for future work. The collaboration paid for her camp's rent that season. Clear terms changed the tone. The road and the runway solve different problems. The road asks for stamina and crowd sight lines. The runway asks for impact in a short pass with fixed lights and a controlled floor. When borrowing crosses over, both sides need to respect those demands. A road frame that swallows a human in 10 hours of heat will fail, no matter how bold the silhouette. A runway piece that ignores weight can still work for 2 minutes, but teaches the wrong lesson about care. There is also the matter of credit lines and pay. Community makers carry names known on their street and island. They do not always carry legal teams. When a house or production borrows, the bare minimum should be written credit, fair fee for teaching and design, and option for ongoing work. Better still is co-authorship on the piece and a line in press materials. The difference shows in who can pay rent and who can hire an apprentice. Supply chains affect ethics on both sides. Feathers raise questions. Some bands now prefer alternatives or recycled stock. Others choose certified sources. Wire waste is collected and sold for scrap. Glue choices shift away from harsh solvents in small rooms. The craft learns from the constraints and keeps the look alive without harm where it can. Training keeps the art strong. Camps hold nights where elders show how to set anchors and distribute load. Young hands learn to flare a quill, notch a joint, and wrap pressure points. The point is speed with safety. A fast hand is nothing without judgment. Apprentices watch elbows and wrists for strain and stop to rest before precision slips. A captain in San Fernando keeps a whiteboard with three columns. Weight, movement, repair. Every costume must pass all three. Weight must be known before stones go on. Movement must be tested with a walk and a turn. Repair must be possible with tools you can fit in a backpack on the road. If any answer is no, the costume goes back to the table. The camp also keeps a repair kit for the road. Wire, tape, spare feathers, clear thread, pins, and foam. Two runners move along the band during the parade and fix straps, replace ties, and trim the odd loose piece. The kit is a sign of respect for the dancers and the work. Photographers and stylists visit camps before big days. Some ask permission and credit the space. Some do not. A polite practice is simple to name. Ask first. Show the images to the band before you post. Spell the camp and the maker's name right. Share copies. The culture has been generous for a long time. Meeting that with care is not hard. On the runway side, designers who want to learn often benefit from clear steps. Visit in the off-season. Pay for a workshop. Sit with wirebenders and seamstresses. Try on a backpack and walk. Learn why the harness sits where it does. Write up a credit line before you leave. Bring the maker into the design room later. That path turns watching into partnership. some countries and islands moved to formal support. Small grants help camps improve ventilation and store materials safely. Short courses teach pricing, contracts, and basic accounting. These steps do not change the art. They protect the people who make it. They also raise the floor on what outside partners must offer to be taken seriously. Risk sits in the gap between fame and income. A carnival image may travel far in a day. The band may not see a cent from that reach. When a runway look draws on moss, a portion of that value comes from the memory in the form. A fair world would send some of that value back to the hands that keep the memory alive. In a quiet corner, a dancer reviews video from a past season on a phone. She watches how a headpiece meets wind and turns the head at a cross street. She notes when a strap rides up after a long line. She asks for a small pad to prevent that rise. The seamstress nods and adds it. The next run is clean. A junior section tests light backpacks. The wirebender marks the frames that tilt and adds a small brace low near the harness. "Balance starts at the anchor," he says. "We do not fix a lean with feathers." The lesson lands. The younger crew repeats it back out loud. The bridge to the runway has a sweet spot. It is the point where a movement-first design enters a stage world and keeps respect for the human inside it. It is also the point where a design-first house steps onto the road and learns why comfort is part of beauty. When both sides meet there, new forms appear without erasing credit. Language matters. Makers deserve names in show notes. Camps deserve mentions in interviews. Teachers deserve lines in biographies. Students deserve pathways to jobs. This is not only kindness. It is a record. Records make it easier to get visas, grants, and future work. A small win becomes a habit. A costume team in Port of Spain partners with a theater company to build a scene with light frames that can survive a tour. The contract lists the lead wirebender as co-designer and sets a fee for repairs and training. The tour runs for 3 months. The frames hold. The team returns with pay, experience, and a template for next time. There is room for standards that come from within the culture. A simple mark could show that a costume met a code for weight, fit, and safe materials. Bands could adopt it. Partners could look for it when they hire. The code would belong to the makers, not to a government or an outside buyer. It would travel with the work. Back at the camp, the dancer takes one more lap around the floor. The feathers lift and fall with the step. The harness stays quiet on the shoulders. The wirebender and seamstress watch in silence. They exchange a small nod. The frame is ready for the road. The meeting point between carnival and couture is not a secret place. It is a contract on paper, a name spoken in public, and a design that keeps the body safe while turning heads. The craft already knows how to do its part. The question is whether the wider world will meet it with equal care, and who will share in the reward when the lights come up. Chapter 4. Sound Makes Style. Kingston, late night. A sound system warms a corner lot at 11:45 p.m. Bass rolls across the street. Dancers test space with small steps, then open their shoulders to the beat. The scene carries a long memory. Mobile speaker stacks have set dress codes since the 1950s. The dance floor asks for clothes that breathe, bend, and shine under low light. Style grows from what the music asks the body to do. A selector fades the track and drops a rhythm with a sharp snare. A dancer answers with fast feet and a clean stop. Her top holds the shoulder without slipping. Her shorts move with her, not against her. The cut is the point. Barbers build the look to match the beat. A fade sits tight for heat. A hard part sets a clean line that reads from a few steps away. Some carve small patterns that echo the music's pause and run. "You walk in, I hear the tempo, and I know the trim," one barber says. Locks, twists, and braids carry both care and code. They protect hair through heat and movement. They also speak to faith, mood, or crew. Beads and wraps add soft sound and flash under lights. The head must move without strain. The style must survive a long night. Nail artists push detail as part of the outfit. Acrylics stretch the hand and catch light when a dancer signals the drop. Flags appear in tiny painted squares. Stones sit low so they do not snag fabric. "You need shine and grip," a nail tech says. You hold a mic or a cup, and the hand tells its own story. Dance hall and reggae shape silhouette and attitude. Mesh tops and open weaves move air. Wide leg jeans allow drops and slides. Slim cuts sharpen a spin. Crepe-soled shoes soften landings on rough concrete. Belts, chains, and waist bags mark the line between function and flair. Sokka changes the rule set. Fates run for hours and ask for stamina. Monday were goes lighter, built for pace and sun. Trainers went over hard sols. Top strap down and stay put through a jump. Paint and powder turn into a color story at dawn. The look is built for sweat and joy. Clubs and video shoots become pipelines. A dancer's outfit at a street session shows up in a video a month later. A video look appears on a stage in London, then at a party in Toronto. Stylists study the moves to see where fabric fails. They adjust cuts and strap points, then share the fix with crews across cities. Hair and nails ride the same wave. A sharp fade in Spanish Town inspires a barber in Brooklyn. A pastel nail set with tiny flags in San Fernando gets copied in a shop in Brixton. The details shift with weather and price, but the core signals stay. Clean lines. Color with intent. Movement first. Video changed the speed of spread. VHS tapes once took months to cross oceans. Now a clip moves in minutes. Looks travel faster than context. A gesture that reads as respect in one place can feel off in another. People follow the look and miss the rule behind it. There is a gap between shine and credit. Dancers build trends with risk and practice. They do not always see pay when a look hits a brand shoot. Stylists bring street logic into studios and fight for names on call sheets. Some win the line. Some watch the idea move without them. Age and gender shift the lens. Elders hold to clean whites, sharp creases, and pressed linen on a Sunday session. Younger crews push sheer layers, bright prints, and sport gear cut for speed. Women balance safety and freedom on crowded floors. They test necklines, straps, and hemlines for both. Diaspora cities add climate and law to the mix. Coats hide dance looks on the train. Venues enforce rules on bags and jewelry. Crews adapt with layers that peel at the door. The core remains. You must move, stay cool, and read as yourself under light. A selector in London laughs about the winter coat pile. "We play the first tune soft," he says. "Give them time to warm up and shed a layer." By the third track, the room looks like home. The camera phones rise. Looks lock in. Choreography pushes tailoring. Moves with low centers ask for gussets at the hip. Fast spins ask for skirts that flare and settle without showing what you do not want to show. Tops need grip points where fingers land and partner work. Makers learn to place seams where bodies touch. The cycle keeps feeding itself. A new step arrives. Tailors adjust a hem. Nail techs test a different length to keep grip. Barbers switch the angle of a line. The next party tests the changes and sends back a verdict. The best ideas stick. By 2:15 a.m., the lot is full. Sweat shows on shoulders and backs. Shoes darken with dust. A DJ calls out a crew by name. They step forward with matching color accents and a shared cut. The crowd clears a space and waits for the first move. Sound turns into style because the body needs help to speak the music. Clothes, hair, and nails are part of that voice. As the clips fly and the looks jump borders, who holds the story, who gets named, and how do clubs, stylists, and crews keep the link between the beat and the cut? Chapter 5, Diaspora Creators. A crowd gathers in a white-walled gallery on a mild evening in London. A jacket on a dress form holds a quiet line. A large canvas across the room hums with crowns and quick marks. In a back corner, a video plays a dancer's hands tying a head wrap. The door opens and more people slip in. They move from garment to painting to screen. They talk about cut, color, and where the ideas come from. The room feels like a conversation across islands and cities. The bridge to the past is clear. Families left Kingston, Port of Spain, Bridgetown, and Castries for New York, Miami, Toronto, and London. They carried recipes, music, and dress habits. Children grew up between school uniforms and carnival photos on the wall. They learned to read two kinds of light and two kinds of cold. The work in this room comes from that path. A curator speaks in a low voice near the jacket. "This designer builds from research and memory," she says. Tailoring meets spiritual notes and community life. Nothing here is random. Every seam has a reason. Viewers lean closer to look at hand stitching along the inner edge of a pocket. Across the floor, a visitor stands in front of the canvas with crowns. The artist was born in New York to a Haitian father and a Puerto Rican mother. He moved fast in the city and left work that keeps asking questions decades later. The crowns feel like a claim and a dare. A guard watches the crowd from a chair and nods when a student whispers the artist's name with care. A young designer from Brixton points at a detail on the jacket. See the collar stand, he says. It gives the neck room when the head turns. The line is formal, but the body can breathe. He takes a photo for his notebook and steps aside. Lived voices carry the chapter forward. An artist from Kingston who builds large installations with flowers and fabric remembers a first trip to a big museum. She walked through rooms lined with marble and stone and thought about the softness of cloth. I wanted to bring the street into the hall, she says. Not as a curiosity, as a truth. When people look at my work, they should feel excess and care together. Her pieces use bright materials linked to dance hall and morning altars. Visitors lean in to find small beads and photos inside the layers. A tailor in South London with Jamaican roots talks about a collection that blends sport and ceremony. The shoulder is where respect lives, he says. You set it so the body can carry weight without strain. He pulls a sleeve inside out to show how a small piece of canvas helps the cap hold shape. A designer in New York with Haitian heritage remembers a show that centered community grief and joy. He tells a friend that the runway is a place for witness as well as display. He set the music low and let the garments do the speaking. He paid the band and the choir and put their names in the book. I wanted people to see the clothes and the people who made the moment, he says. Names surface in conversation without turning to ads. A painter with crowns left a mark on how both galleries and fashion read street codes. A British designer with Caribbean roots put scholarship on the runway and made research feel like a garment. A Jamaican-born designer based in New York keeps knit and mesh alive with references to dance floors and patios. A Barbadian artist turned entrepreneur changed casting norms on global stages and treated the show as a full performance with care for who stands in the light. The tension lines appear as soon as the praise rises. Credit and pay do not always match influence. A motif travels into a print without a fee. A runway borrows a color story and forgets the origin in the press notes. A film crew shoots in a Caribbean neighborhood and does not hire local stylists. People in the room know these stories. They want better habits to become rules. Ownership takes many forms. A painter's estate fights to control use of symbols that have become global shorthand. A designer builds an archive so students can see the slow work behind one jacket or one dress. A musician funds a lab where young makers test cuts, straps, and supportive underlayers for dancers. Each path says the same thing in a different tone. Keep a record. Share knowledge with terms that respect labor. A gallerist in New York calls a Jamaican artist to talk through a new show. The artist's work uses silk flowers and glitter with heavy meaning. The gallerist asks about installation time, storage conditions, and how to train local handlers. They plan a walkthrough for staff and set aside 2 days for acclimation. The artist says it is the first time someone asked for those steps without prompting. The show opens on time. The work looks cared for. In a studio in Brooklyn, a designer explains a knit that reads like a net. The reference is a fish pot and a dance. He tested 3 yarn weights to get stretch without sag. He asked friends to wear prototypes for a week and tracked how the shape held. I want the garment to honor both the floor and the eye, he says. He writes his testers' names on the studio wall. A singer from St. Michael moved from music into building shows where the cast looks like the world. She sets a standard on tone and availability for the audience at home and abroad. Dancers talk about feeling seen. Models describe a backstage that gives time for hair textures and skin shades to be done well. The runway becomes a signal. Other shows follow with broader casting and different pacing. Education underpins all of this. An artist from Kingston remembers high school teachers who took students to craft markets and asked them to sketch baskets. A designer in London remembers elders who talked about cutting jackets to handle summer heat. A painter remembers his mother's stories from Haiti and Puerto Rico and how they kept him alert to symbols. These memories turn into methods in studios and classrooms. Networks matter. A young stylist in Toronto assists on a set led by a woman from Port of Spain. He learns how to build a call sheet that lists hair and makeup needs by texture. He learns to budget for alterations and to bring extra underlayers for dancers. He carries those practices to the next job. People on set breathe easier. The day moves. Museums and fashion schools begin to adjust. They invite artists, designers, and stylists with Caribbean roots to teach. They pay properly for visits and set longer residencies. They support archives that hold videos of head wrap lessons, wire bending, and dyeing. Students get to see slow steps and small tools. They hear the words that keep craft alive. There are points of debate. Some critics ask whether the use of crowns on a t-shirt empties the sign. Some ask whether a runway that quotes dance hall without naming it in print does harm. Some ask whether a show that uses prayer language treats faith lightly. These questions have weight. They push makers and institutions to tighten credit, fees, and context. Style and art travel on bodies and in rooms. A painting in a museum can teach a designer how to place a pocket. A dance video can teach a tailor where a seam must move. A head wrap lesson on a phone can change how a stylist plans for hair care on set. The loop is constant. The best work says thank you by name. A quiet studio visit in South London shows the care behind a small collection. The designer keeps books on a table with pages open to essays on history and music. Swatches cover a board with notes in pencil about drape and crease memory. A photo of a grandfather in Sunday where sits by the machine. The suit carried him through hard rooms, the designer says. I want my pieces to serve like that. Not louder. Stronger. Meanwhile, a painter in New York sets a crown on a small drawing and smiles at the speed of the line. The crown has been copied so often that it can feel like a public sign. For the painter, it still marks a claim to personhood and value. The line travels into the next canvas with no need for permission. It is his mark and his right. Back in Kingston, an installation grows in a studio with soft light. A team threads silk flowers into net and attaches small portraits to the stems. They talk about dance hall outfits from a decade ago and how those looks held strength and play at the same time. They remember friends who are not here now. The work holds those names without saying them out loud. Visitors will feel the weight, even if they do not know the stories. A young designer in New York sends a thank you note to a teacher in Jamaica. He writes about his first show and how he kept the clothes light at the shoulder so models could move in heat. He tells the teacher that the lesson on clean seams and matched checks stayed with him. He adds two photos and promises to visit and teach a class when he can. The gallery in London empties as the evening ends. The jacket on the form catches the last light. The canvas with crowns pulls the eye again before the door clicks shut. The video of the head wrap lesson loops in the quiet room. Diaspora success shows several models. Scholarship made visible in cut and stitch. Community grief and joy translated into garments and shows. Street codes honored in galleries and on runways. Entrepreneurial power used to set wider standards. The next question is simple and hard. How do contracts, archives, and schools lock these gains in place so that the people who built them keep credit, pay, and a path for those who come next? Chapter 6, Art Circuits and Institutions. Morning rain lifts over Bridgetown. A modest gallery opens its shutters. Inside, a curator checks labels and wipes a glass case that holds a small straw fan. A wall text speaks about labor, heat, and care. Students file in with notebooks. The bridge to older paths sits in the floor plan. Caribbean art has moved along festivals, small museums, street stalls, and church halls. Biennials draw crowds in capital cities. Community centers host workshops in villages. Residencies turn rented houses into studios for a season. The circuit is a web, not a ladder. Lived voices guide the tour. The curator points to a series made with cut metal from oil drums. She describes a yard in a town outside Port-au-Prince where hammers ring all afternoon. This began as a way to live, she says. It became a language that museums now learn to read. She pauses so the group can study the hammered lines up close. In Kingston, a museum educator pulls a group to a room of works by intuitive painters and sculptors. She speaks about vision, belief, and daily tools. She says the work traveled from yards and verandas to this climate-controlled space because people cared enough to carry it and explain it. You are here to keep that care going, she tells the students. A festival director in Port of Spain flips through a binder. She maps shipping routes, customs forms, and insurance values. She calls an elder wirebender to secure a loan of an early headpiece. She calls a young video artist to confirm a talk. We are a bridge, she says. Not a funnel. We move ideas in both directions. Tension arrives with selection. What makes it onto a plane? What is declared museum-worthy? A carved calabash bowl stays in a kitchen, while a single steel pan sits under a spotlight. A hand-sewn flag hangs in a hall, while dozens more fade in sun on a fence. Elevation can feel like rescue. It can also feel like loss when the context drops away. There is a money question folded into this. A biennial pays a shipping bill and a small fee. A craft market pays rent for a month. A gallery sale changes a family's year. Grants prefer applications written in a certain tone. Communities prefer action in plain talk. The circuit rewards people who can move in both rooms and stay honest in each. Migration and climate push new themes into public view. Artists show coastlines that shrink. They stitch evacuation maps into quilts. They cast concrete blocks shaped by wave patterns. They print family photos onto fabric used in hurricane shutters. Institutions learn to host work that needs wind or water to make sense. They build schedules around seasons when storms are strong. Craft to fine art crossings keep growing. A straw hat becomes a study in line and negative space. Wirebent forms red as drawing in air. Indigo dye vats become living installations that stain cloth over a week. Labels shift from souvenir to sculpture and from costume to design. The shift works when makers are named and paid, and when techniques are taught with permission. Cities outside the region host Caribbean seasons. Toronto sets a month of shows across libraries and galleries. London schedules a week where talks, films, and pop-up studios fill small rooms. Miami gathers fairs in winter. These circuits can lift careers. They can also compress stories into quick hits. Artists and curators try to slow the pace with studio visits, school talks, and patient tours. Archives become anchors. A small museum in Castries scans photos of carnival bands from past decades. A university in Mona records elders teaching basket stitches. A foundation in San Juan stores video of head wrap lessons and dye recipes. The files help future loans and shows. They also help families prove authorship when a motif travels without credit. Institutions face their own audits. Do wall texts name communities and teachers? Do contracts include travel, per diem, and insurance at real rates? Do programs pay interpreters when elders speak in a language that is not the audience's first? Do boards include people who know the work from the inside? Each yes steadies the bridge. Gatekeepers shift. A market vendor who curates a stall becomes a consultant to a museum shop. A camp captain joins a selection committee for a city festival. A craft teacher runs a residency that pairs elders with young artists across islands. These roles change what gets shown and how it is described. Education sits at the center. School visits make future audiences who can tell a stitch from a glue line. Studio classes teach care for tools and bodies. Public talks give credit to processes that are slow and exact. When audiences learn to ask how long a piece took and where it was made, markets adjust in the right direction. Respect guidance helps visitors move well. Do not touch unless invited. Ask before you photograph people at work. Learn the name of a technique and try to pronounce it right. Buy a small piece if you can and learn how to care for it. Share the maker's name when someone asks you about it later. These are small actions with large effects. The day in Bridgetown ends with a panel. An artist speaks about visas and shipping delays. A curator speaks about budgets and fairness. A vendor speaks about price and pride. A student asks how to keep the line between appreciation and extraction. The room goes quiet for a moment. Art from the Caribbean moves through halls, tents, and streets because people keep carrying it and teaching it. The circuits are uneven, but they exist. The open question remains. As shows, fairs, and residencies grow, which stories rise to global stages, which stay rooted by choice, and how do institutions prove in writing and practice that credit context and pay travel with the work? Chapter 7, Futures and Ethics. Dawn comes with a steady breeze over a hillside studio in St. Andrew. A maker checks a rack of hand-woven yardage and runs a palm along the selvage. Solar lights click off. Rain barrels stand full from last night. The bridge to the future looks practical. Heat is rising across the region. Storms hit harder and more often. Studios answer with small grids of panels, cross-vented rooms, and benches that bolt to the floor before hurricane season. Workflows shift to fit the weather, not fight it. Materials lead the change. Banana fiber is stripped, washed, and spun in short runs. Coconut coir becomes cord and mat. Sisal from dry hills turns into rope, tassels, and firm trims. Sea Island cotton under careful farming returns in small lots. Dyes come from indigo, logwood, and local leaves, set with slow methods that use less water. Small batch thinking guides the cut. Designers plan runs of 10, 20, or 50 instead of thousands. Patterns nest tight to reduce offcuts. Trims come from previous runs. Labels track origin, maker, and the week of production. The garment carries a plain record that a buyer can understand. Lived voices keep the plans honest. A dyer in Hanover says he closes vats by noon in the hottest months and reopens after 4. He saves rainwater for the first rinse and keeps shade over the work line. The blue likes calm, he says. We follow the day. A weaver in St. George runs 2 looms instead of 6. She pays 3 trainees a steady rate and builds a queue. I do not chase rush orders, she says. I book the calendar and I keep the promise. People wait because they trust the cloth. She shows a ledger with deposits and delivery weeks written in full. A studio in San Juan installs a manual press for buttons cut from gourd and shell. The team documents each step with short notes and photos. They keep the tool list simple enough to replace locally after a storm. We want to restart fast, the lead says. If a machine fails, we do not want to wait 3 months for a part. Fair pay ties these choices together. Workshops post day rates on the wall. Apprentices start with a living number and clear steps to rise. Piece rate work includes a base, so slow seasons do not break people. When a buyer asks for a discount, the answer includes the real hours behind a hem, a die, or a stitch. Intellectual property needs plain tools. Model contracts list credit lines, royalty share, and where images can appear. When a motif is taught in a class, the agreement limits use to personal work unless a further fee is paid. When a brand commissions a print, the license states time, region, and renewal terms. This language travels with the file and the box. Communities consider marks that signal consent. A simple stamp can mean the pattern was shared for sale with fair pay. Another mark can mean the pattern is for ceremony and not for trade. Shops learn the difference and teach buyers at the counter. The point is not to block culture. It is to steer money and respect to the right hands. Appropriation and appreciation meet in details. A runway can study a head wrap and still decline to copy the knot. A label can borrow a color story and still pay a consultant to set context. A museum can show a frame and still hire makers to build and talk in the gallery. The line is not soft. It is written into credits, fees, and seats at the table. Platforms change the map again. Makers sell in small drops announced to their lists. Diaspora customers order and wait for real lead times. Short videos show how a seam is reinforced or how a die is set. The tone is not hype. It is proof. Good process becomes a form of trust. Cooperatives grow in quiet ways. 3 studios buy fiber together and share a cutter. 5 weavers hire 1 bookkeeper. A legal clinic holds a monthly hour to explain terms and visas. A shipping club pools crates and negotiates a better rate. These moves do not make headlines. They make livelihood steady. Repair is treated like design, not an afterthought. Garments ship with spare buttons, a matching patch, and a short care card. Shops offer 1 free mend in the first year. Tailors teach owners how to press pleats back into memory. A dress that lasts 10 years holds value that a trend cannot touch. Climate resilience shapes schedules and storage. Studios bolt racks to walls and raise boxes off floors. Digital backups of patterns live in 2 places. Dye powders stay sealed in tight tubs. When warnings come, teams pack a simple kit to restart. The plan is written, not kept in one person's head. Education is the long game. Schools teach young people how to price hours and materials. Teachers show how to photograph work in natural light and write a simple invoice. Elders visit to demonstrate knots, coils, and stitches. Students learn how to listen and how to credit by name. The next cohort stands on this base. Institutions can move money the right way. Grants can fund time in the studio, not only shows. Residencies can include childcare. Travel budgets can cover visas, insurance, and a day to rest after long flights. Shops inside museums can stock goods from the show and pay a fair share to the makers. When policies change, lives change. Diaspora links bring fresh options. A seamstress in Toronto manages pre-orders for a workshop in St. Lucia. A photographer in Brooklyn runs shoots that highlight fit on different bodies and sends files back with captions ready. A lawyer in London reviews a contract for a festival in Port of Spain. The circle holds. Digital provenance tools help when used with care. A file can carry a maker's name, island, and date embedded from the start. A print can include a tiny woven mark that confirms source. A public page lists license terms in plain language. None of this replaces trust. It extends it across distance. Brands that want to work well can follow a simple path. Ask early. Pay for research time. Put names on tags and press notes. Share photos and copies. fun training that remains after the show. Set royalties when a motif carries into future seasons. This is not extra. It is the work. Tourism can adjust its lens. Hotels can hire local stylists for uniforms and credit them. Gift shops can stock small batch goods with maker cards that explain care and origin. Cruise lines can schedule visits that include workshops where makers are paid to teach. Visitors leave with skill and respect, not only a bag. There are hard choices ahead. Some materials may need to rest to recover. Some dyes may be retired in drought. Some motifs may be held back from sale to protect meaning. Makers and communities can set those lines and change them with time. The right to say no is part of the right to be seen. Measurement keeps everyone honest. Studios track pay gaps by role. Festivals count how many local hires are in technical teams. Museums review how many shows include living stipends and production budgets that match the scale of the work. Annual reports list these numbers in plain terms. The legal frame can grow from inside the region. Cultural ministries can support collective marks and contract templates. Schools can fold business literacy into art programs. Banks can offer small lines of credit based on confirmed orders, not only on collateral. These steps put muscle behind fairness. Buyers play a role at the counter. Ask who made the piece. Ask how to care for it. Pay the price without pushing down. Share the maker's name when someone asks about the dress or the head wrap. Bring a damaged piece back to fix instead of throwing it away. Small acts add up. Young people will carry the rest. They know heat records and storm tracks by heart. They also know how to film a clean tutorial and how to run a drop without chaos. They want work that pays, honors elders, and leaves the island stronger than they found it. The tools are in their hands already. Evening settles on the hillside studio. A new roll of banana fiber sits by the door. The maker writes tomorrow's list on a scrap of paper. Warp the loom. Test a new logwood bath. Draft an invoice with the right credit lines. Call the apprentice to confirm hours. The future of Caribbean art and fashion will be built in choices like these. Slow runs that fit the climate. Contracts that name names. Platforms that show hands at work. When the next wave of interest arrives, will the exchange be steady, named, and paid in full? And who will make sure the answers hold when the wind rises?